Eric Smith is our Raptors radio voice on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, he's also our sideline reporter and Raptors telecast, and he joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Mr. Smith, thank you so much for doing this. The Raptors signing Serge Ibaka, 3 years, $65 million. Kyle gets $300 million. I'm going to ask you first and foremost if you're surprised that either one of those two are back. And are you with me that maybe Masai Ujiri has just looked at things and said, you know, this window of opportunity may be open a little longer. It may not have been all our doing. It may be some factors beyond our control. But you know what? Maybe the factors beyond our control are actually working to our benefit right now.
Yeah, and Jeff, I'll agree with that. I know on the weekend, just kind of, you know, playing along through social media, one of the things that I had posted was the fact that, you know, you look at how many people have now gone west, how many big-time names have now gone west, and the number of super teams or super teams light that we now have in the Western Conference, from Oklahoma City to obviously to Houston to San Antonio still, let alone obviously the Golden State Warriors, and the list goes on of so many quality teams there. And you look at the Eastern Conference, and it's all based on a big if that you have already acknowledged. But if LeBron James ultimately does leave in a year and potentially goes to Los Angeles, the Eastern Conference could very well be wide open. And I would say right now, as of July 4th, the same three or four teams that you would have put right on the heels of the Cavaliers are still right there. Because of Toronto bringing back Kyle Lowry and Serge Ibaka, you keep the Raptors in that conversation. Because of the youth and the assets that you spoke of with Boston, they're still in that conversation. Because Washington is still right there with their core, and maybe they do or don't lose Otto Porter, but essentially they're still right there in the conversation. And the other team I'd have put in that mix is the Milwaukee Bucks, coming along strong. But after that, there's a serious drop-off, I think, in the Eastern Conference. And the Miami Heat and the Charlotte Hornets, I think, are in that next tier. And then you've probably got at least a year, if not a couple of years, before Philadelphia is ready to make the ultimate leap with their young core and with some of the players they brought in, even on one-year contracts this year in free agency, in J.J. Redick and Amir Johnson. But I still think that they're at least a couple of years away from being, you know, considered in that sort of upper tier, top four or five teams in the East. So when you kind of look at all of that, I think it became clear for Masai Ujiri to say, let's keep the band together. And he did it well, in the sense that he now has all three of his guys coming off the books essentially at the same time, where they can decide, let alone he can decide, if it's worth going for another tour of duty with these guys in 3 years, or if they ultimately say, you know what, we've had our run, we didn't ultimately make it where we wanted to, we're going to not even address this, you guys are free to go on somewhere else. And it's kind of worked out perfectly, I think, in a financial landscape for Toronto from that sense. And the other thing that hasn't been mentioned as quickly as well, a lot of people some have been critical of whether it's the right fit, the right mix. Is it enough? First of all, it's only July 4th. There's still plenty more that could be done. Mm-hmm. But this threesome, Jeff, has played 10 games together. You know, there's a very small sample size of what Ibaka, Lowry, and DeRozan can do. You remember that, when Ibaka came in, it coincided with Lowry being hurt. Then Lowry and Ibaka each missed a game down the stretch in terms of resting up for the playoffs. They only played a couple of regular season games together, two or three, if I'm not mistaken. And then, of course, in the playoffs, you had Kyle Lowry getting hurt, and you only had, 10 total games anyways. They've played 10, 12 games together total as a threesome. So I think it's kind of an unknown how good this group, this core, could essentially be for Masai Ujiri.
Do you think that Masai Ujiri regrets talking about culture change right now and then essentially finding himself with the same team? And what I mean by that is I almost got the sense when he addressed the media after the season was over that in his own mind he had kind of cut the cord with Kyle a little bit, because it seemed to me, Eric, that Kyle Lowry is the player. I mean, if you're a team that has a general manager or president who's talking openly about needing to shoot more three-pointers and be more efficient, you want Kyle Lowry. You know what I mean? Because he's the one, he's guy you have in your team who's your best three-point shooter, arguably. And I'm wondering when we heard that, if maybe in Masai's own mind he'd cut the cord a little bit with Kyle? Or do you think I'm being, you know, reading a little too much into what was otherwise just kind of a general statement about culture change?
My own gut is that you might be reading a little bit into it, but I can't say that with any authority, because I expected that Lowry would return.
Okay.
I'll be the first to admit that I wasn't feeling as strong about my thoughts a week ago, or even less than that, when you start seeing some of the other moves that were going on around the NBA. And then, of course, you start hearing the overtures about the Minnesota Timberwolves, and then they make the Ricky Rubio trade, and suddenly they've got this vacancy at the point. And it seemed like there were a lot of dots connecting. So I wasn't confident in what I was feeling. But the way I took the culture change, Jeff, and I want to be clear about the way I say this, because I don't want to sound like I'm throwing Dwayne Casey under the bus, because that's not the case at all. Mm-hmm. I think it was more a comment on changing the way we play. And I know mm-hmm. he ultimately did say that as well, not just the culture, but the way we play. And I think that there was nothing wrong, and there's been really nothing wrong with the way that the Raptors have played. Let's remember that a couple of years ago they were the top defense. A couple of years ago they were the top offense. This year they kind of were sort of hovering in the middle of both. I think it's more a case of, with the core that we have, we need to play a little more offensive-minded. It can't be about defense all the time. As much as we talk about defense winning championships, you've got to be able to score. You've got to be able to play from the outside in now, not necessarily from inside out. There needs to be maybe greater emphasis on bringing along some of the younger guys if they're giving you more. I think it was more stuff along that line about, let's reset our style, our style of play overall, and the way that we perform on a nightly basis. And I think then a lot of that is almost putting onus on himself, not just on his coach or not just on his players. That's why I want to be clear that it's not just the Dwayne Casey thing. It's players themselves. I think the point guard position has changed in today's NBA. You know, you've got to be a facilitator, but you've got to be a scorer. You've got to be the ultimate decision maker, and you've got to include guys more. It's got to be on DeMar DeRozan to know, you know, when to give up the ball as well, to not necessarily just be an isolation guy all the time. He's got to develop a three-point shot. That's part of the culture change as well. It's on Masai to perhaps look at changing some of the personnel to better fit the way that most teams are playing in today's NBA, i.e. bringing back Serge Ibaka. I'm guessing you're not bringing him back to play the four alongside, you know, a more traditional, slower back-to-the-basket Jonas Valanciunas for an entire season. Does Jonas come off the bench now, or is Jonas ultimately dealt and Serge Ibaka is your five? Because in today's NBA, Ibaka is far more better suited as a center than a power forward. So I think, again, that comment he made was all-encompassing, and including himself, let alone his coach and his players, to the change that needs to exist if the Raptors want to take that next step.
So, Eric, what do you think the next move is for Masai Ujiri?
Well, we all hear about the rumblings about the shedding of salaries to ultimately get the payroll a little bit more in order. And part of the reason for that, just so folks are clear, it's not just about Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment trying to save money, because they've got right now the second highest payroll in terms of committed guaranteed salaries for next season. It might not be ultimately, you know, when the dust settles, the second highest payroll, but in terms of guaranteed committed salaries, they're right up there behind the Cleveland Cavaliers. So they're spending the money. But part of the reason they want to maybe shed is because of the implications under the collective bargaining agreement and the NBA salary cap rules. If they're below a certain threshold, then there's certain exceptions and exemptions that they can still tap into that wouldn't necessarily count against their ultimate cap number. I know that sounds confusing to a lot of folks, but there are, again, exceptions that they can tap into if that number comes down. So if their total payroll is below X number, they can still have up to $5, $6 million on an exemption to go and sign another free agent. I think before they even get to other free agent signings, to answer your question, there does need to be a trade or two that maybe frees up some of that financial flexibility. I think the tough thing will be, though, is I think Jonas Valanciunas is a very good player. I think that he still serves an absolute purpose in today's NBA, as much as it's high-octane offense, et cetera, et cetera. But is he ultimately best served as a starter, or is he a guy that's coming into a second unit? And I think whether he's staying in Toronto on your team or whether he's being dealt to another team, does it make it difficult to deal him and get something of value in return when other teams are thinking the same thing? We like Jonas Valanciunas. We like his skill set. We like his scoring, his ability in the post, his rebounding. But he's not the most athletic guy. He's not the quickest guy. He's not a shot blocker. He's not a three-point shooter. Does he fit in today's NBA? That's going to be tough to make the trade for that. And then losing P.J. Tucker as much as you might have a replacement ultimately, you know, that could be sitting right there in a smaller player in a Norm Powell, can you even afford to lose a Damari Carroll now if you essentially then are taking away Damari Carroll and P.J. Tucker from your team and then handing the reins to who? Norm Powell and what? You know, the draft pick is going to eventually be healthy enough to play, but it might not be until the new year, depending on how things shake out. So that, to me, is where Masai Ujiri's got the difficult decisions now. He and Bobby Webster are trying to figure out, Jeff, what direction do we go? Because that gap of Tucker perhaps impacts the potential move that we might have made for a Damari Carroll. And then, of course, not having Valanciunas on the team, if you were to trade him, does that mean now that you're suddenly promoting and jumping up on the depth chart right away, guys like Jakob Poeltl, and Pascal Siakam, because the other name we haven't mentioned in all this is whether Patrick Patterson is even a fit here anymore. And it would seem like he's not, but whether the Raptors can work out something with Pat or not remains to be seen.
Yeah, and one of the things, one of the reasons I would be kind of loath to trade Damari Carroll is one of the things Masai Ujiri said that I found intriguing was, this is kind of the guy, healthy, the type of player you want in the NBA. You want a 3-and-D guy. And you know what? Essentially, I think what Masai was saying is, look, we've ridden the hard path with this guy for a couple of years due to injury. This is the first year he's going to have a fully fit offseason. He seems to like it in Toronto. Seems to like the guys that he's with. They seem to be okay with him. To me, you almost have to keep Damari Carroll because you've invested that much money in him now and you haven't received... You haven't received much of a return in the way of a return from him. And he's the one guy, Eric, I look at this team and say, who's the one guy that could come in healthy, play the way he's capable of playing, and immediately help this team become the type of team Masai Ujiri wants to be? And it's him.
I would agree with you, especially when you factor in now the loss of P.J. Tucker.
Mm-hmm.
Because Tucker was one of those guys as a defender, as a veteran voice, as a three-point shooter as well. If you had him, does that make a Damari Carroll expendable if you're able to find a trade partner? Yes. Without a P.J. Tucker coming back, although I completely agree that Damari Carroll, and it's all based on the health 100%, if he's healthy and if he's able to go, we've seen blips. Now, we haven't seen enough of them, but we've seen those flashes from Damari Carroll and those nights where he steps up and gives you, 12, 15, 18 points, and he knocks down 2, 3, 4 triples, and he's defending well, or he's active on the glass. Those blips on the radar that we haven't seen enough of. But if he can provide that fairly consistently, would he be a guy that could continue to start? And depending how small Toronto ultimately wants to go, could he play at the 4? Would you play him at the 3 still? And again, elevate one of the youngsters, or still be active in the trade or the free agent market to find a 4, assuming Ibaka is playing at the 5? Carroll could absolutely fit that role. And part of the other thing that you bring up, Jeff, is because he's been around and because he's got the familiarity with the teammates, if you're trying to bring the band back to use that line again, you don't want to have too much of a transition or a feeling out phase with new faces.
Mm-hmm.
It's essentially, I think, one of the great assets of the Raptors over the last couple of years has been the consistency and the familiarity of the core guys and not having a whole whack of, 5, 6, 7, 8 new guys and trying to go through those first 25, 30 games of the season where you're really working on chemistry more than anything else. If you can hit the ground running from the get-go this season with the core remaining intact with next to no new faces, I'd say that's still pretty damn good. I mean, ultimately this year was a letdown with the Raptors getting swept in round 2, but it's still been a pretty solid back-to-back 50-plus win seasons with a pretty darn good talented core overall, and I think that's maybe what Masai Ujiri is looking at to try and keep this thing going for next year and at least for a couple more.
Eric, I'm going to ask you the same thing I asked Jones. Are you surprised that the Boston Celtics haven't been able to make that sort of that big signature move we all thought they would? Now, Paul said, hey, it's early. It's not like, everybody's going to go away for the next 4 months. And Danny can still make a move and maybe he's keeping his powder dry. But I know in Boston, they thought they would see more by now.
Yeah, I'm a little bit surprised. I mean, I hear what Jones is saying, and I think I said the same thing earlier, even just in our chat about the Raptors and what they may or may not do. It is only July 4th. There's still a hell of a long time before training camp rolls around. But when you look at, we've been talking, it seems like, for a year or more now about the assets that the Boston Celtics have with there's so many, the picks that they have, and let alone so many young pieces. And the one thing that I don't know. I don't mean to sound like I'm railing on Boston here, but Jeff, when you look at the Celtics and the season they had and they were the number one seed, but I still have questions. There's no denying his talent. I'm not here to rag on the guy. There's no denying his talent. But I still have questions with a 5'6", 5'7", guard that doesn't defend well. And as much as you've surrounded him with other good pieces, you know, and you think of some of the talented defenders that Boston has, I look at Boston being more like a team like a Detroit back in the day that has a lot of good role players but no real superstar. I mean, there are some that want to throw Isaiah Thomas into that superstar category. I'd say he's an all-star and a very good player, but I don't know that he's a franchise-changing, altering player. He's very good. But then you look at the pieces around and think of Crowder and think of Bradley and think of even a Kelly Olynyk and obviously with Tatum coming in, like you've got a lot of those young pieces, but they're right now complementary players, role players, I think, that make them collectively good. I think what Boston needs to take it to that next level is that star power. How do you get it? You make a trade. So I feel part of it might be Danny Ainge being a little bit gun shy, but at the same time, if the right move hasn't come along, then why mortgage everything you have just for that one guy at this point? So I think that's where I can kind of see both sides of what's happening with the Celtics. But it's part of the reason why I say they don't scare me at this point. Maybe I'll change my tune in 6 months, but I think you could have easily made the case for the Toronto Raptors or the Washington Wizards to be right there as the number one seed right alongside Washington. I think you and I even had this conversation late in the season.
Sure.
So four games I look at this year. Toronto lost both games to Phoenix, both games to Sacramento. Even if they split those two series and get 1-1 against both, the Raptors are the number one seed in the East. You know, you look at things like that that happen over the course of the regular season, and even being that number one seed in the East, would that have mattered in terms of the national spotlight in the U.S.? Would that have mattered in terms of what ultimately played out in the playoffs? Would that have mattered in terms of the way that certain people look at the Raptors in free agency? That was the number one seed in the East. That was a team that went back to the conference finals, let's say, 2 years in a row. That was a team that was right there neck and neck with Cleveland. Would any of that have mattered? So I think that, again, that muddled mess of those teams, they're right on the heels of the Cavs, and a lot of this could change with one quick move. Celtics get better, Raptors make a deal, LeBron James leaves Cleveland. There's so much right there that's riding on the Eastern Conference. There's no doubt it's the weaker conference overall right now, but that could be a good thing if you're Toronto, Washington, Milwaukee, Boston, because it could open up your path to a conference finals or a championship for a couple of years to come, especially if LeBron's not there.